sidewalk. Except for Mrs. Allen's snores, there was no noise but the sound of water dripping from their clothes to the linoleum. They had been gone only 20 minutes, but it felt as though eons had passed. Quietly, they tiptoed upstairs and hid their wet clothes in the hamper and put on dry, and when their parents returned with suitcases and boxes of books, they said nothing. When their mother complained about the water spots on the floor, Nath said he had spilled a drink. At bedtime, Nath and Lydia brushed their teeth sociably at the sink, taking turns to spit, saying goodnight as if it were any other night. It was too big to talk about what had happened. It was like a landscape they could not see all at once. It was like the sky at night, which turned and turned so they couldn't find its edges. It would always feel too big. He pushed her in, and then he pulled her out. All her life, Lydia would remember one thing. All his life, Nath would remember another. Middlewood Elementary held its annual Welcome Back picnic on the last weekend in August. Their mother pressed one hand to her belly, where Hannah grew heavier every day. Their father carried Lydia on his shoulders as they walked across the parking lot. After lunch, there were contests. Who could hit a wiffle ball the farthest? Who could toss the most bean bags into a coffee can? Who could guess the number of jelly beans in the 1 gallon mason jar? Nath and James entered the father-son egg race, each balancing a raw egg in a teaspoon like an offering. They made it almost all the way to the finish line before Nath tripped and dropped his. Miles Fuller and his father crossed the line first, and Mrs. Hugard, the principal, gave them the blue ribbon. "It's okay," James said. And for a moment, Nath felt better. Then his father added, "Now, if they had a contest for reading all day." All month he had been saying things like this, things that sounded like jokes but weren't. Every time, as he heard his own voice, James bit the tip of his tongue too late. He did not understand why he said these things to Nath, for that would have meant understanding something far more painful. But Nath reminded him more and more of himself, of everything he wanted to forget from his own boyhood. He knew only that it was becoming a reflex, one that left him smarting and ashamed, and he glanced away. Nath looked down at his broken egg, yolk trickling between blades of grass, whites seeping into the soil. Lydia gave him a small smile, and he ground the shell into the dirt with his sneaker. When his father turned his back, Nath spat into the lawn at his feet. And then came the three-legged race. A teacher looped a handkerchief around Lydia's and Nath's ankles, and they hobbled to the starting line, where other children were tethered to their parents, or to siblings, or to each other. They had hardly begun to run when Lydia caught the edge of Nath's shoe under her own and stumbled. Nath threw an arm wide for balance and wobbled. He tried to match Lydia's stride, but when Lydia swung her leg forward, Nath pulled back. The handkerchief around their ankles was tied so tight their feet throbbed. It didn't loosen, yoking them together like mismatched cattle. And it didn't come undone, even when they jerked in opposite directions and tumbled face forward onto the soft, damp grass. 7. 10 years later, it had still not come undone. Years passed. Boys went to war, men went to the moon, presidents arrived and resigned and departed. All over the country, in Detroit and Washington and New York, crowds roiled in the streets, angry about everything. All over the world, nations splintered and cracked. North Vietnam, East Berlin, Bangladesh. Everywhere things came undone. But for the Lees, that knot persisted and tightened, as if Lydia bound them all together. Every day, James drove home from college, where he taught his cowboy class term after term after term, until he could recite the lectures word for word, mulling over the slights of the day, how two little girls, hopscotching on the corner, had seen him break at the stop sign and thrown pebbles at his car, how Stan Hewitt had asked him the difference between a spring roll and an egg roll, how Mrs. Allen had smirked when he drove past. Only when he reached home and saw Lydia did the bitter smog dissipate. For her, he thought, everything would be different. She would have friends to say, "Don't be an idiot, Stan, how the hell would she know?" She would be poised and confident. She would say, "Afternoon, Vivian," and look right at her neighbors with those wide blue eyes. Every day, the thought grew more precious. Every day, as Marilyn unboxed a frozen pie or defrosted a Salisbury steak, for she still refused to cook, and the family quietly accepted this as the price of her presence, she made plans. Books she would buy Lydia, science fair projects, summer classes. "Only if you're interested," she told Lydia every time. "Only if you want to." She meant it every time, but she did not realize she was holding her breath. Lydia did. "Yes," she said, every time. "Yes, yes." And her mother would breathe again. In the newspaper, which between loads of washing Marilyn read front to back, metering out the day, section by section, she saw glimmers of hope. Yale admitted women. Then Harvard. The nation learned new words. Affirmative action. Equal rights amendment. Ms. In her mind, Marilyn spun out Lydia's future in one long golden thread. The future she was positive her daughter wanted, too. Lydia in high heels and a white coat, a stethoscope round her neck. Lydia bent over an operating table, a ring of man awed at her deft handiwork. Every day it seemed more possible. Every day, at the dinner table, Nath sat quietly while his father quizzed Lydia about her friends, while his mother nudged Lydia about her classes. When they turned, dutifully, to him, he was tongue-tied, because his father, still seared by the memory of a smashed television and his son's slapped face, did not ever want to hear about space. And that was all Nath read or thought about. In his spare moments, he worked his way through every book in the school card catalog. Space flight. Astrodynamics. See also combustion, propulsion, satellites. After a few stuttering replies, the spotlight would swivel back to Lydia, and Nath would retreat to his room in his aeronautics magazines, which he stashed under his bed like pornography. He did not mind this permanent state of eclipse. Every evening, Lydia rapped at his door, silent and miserable. He understood everything she did not say, which at its core was, "Don't let go." When Lydia left, to struggle over her homework or a science fair project, he turned his telescope outward, looking for faraway stars, far-off places where he might one day venture alone. And Lydia herself, the reluctant center of their universe. Every day she held the world together. She absorbed her parents' dreams, quieting the reluctance that bubbled up within. Years passed. Johnson and Nixon and Ford came and went. She grew willowy. Nath grew tall. Creases formed around their mother's eyes, their father's hair silvered at the temples. Lydia knew what they wanted so desperately, even when they didn't ask. Every time, it seemed such a small thing to trade for their happiness. So she studied algebra in the summertime. She put on a dress and went to the freshman dance. She enrolled in biology at the college, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, all summer long. Yes, yes, yes. What about Hannah? They set up her nursery in the bedroom in the attic, where things that were not wanted were kept. And even when she got older, now and then each of them would forget, fleetingly, that she existed. As when Marilyn, laying four plates for dinner one night, did not realize her omission until Hannah reached the table. Hannah, as if she understood her place in the cosmos, grew from quiet infant to watchful child. A child fond of nooks and corners, who curled up in closets, behind sofas, under dangling tablecloths, staying out of sight as well as out of mind, to ensure the terrain of the family did not change. A decade after that terrible year, everything had turned upside down. For the rest of the world, 1976 was a topsy-turvy time, too, culminating in an unusually cold winter and strange headlines. Snow falls on Miami. Lydia was 15 and a half, and winter break had just begun. In 5 months, she would be dead. That December, alone in her room, she opened her book bag and pulled out a physics test, with a red 55 at the top. The biology course had been hard enough, but by memorizing kingdom, phylum, and class, she'd passed the first few tests. Then, as the course got tougher, she had gotten lucky. The boy who sat to her right studied hard, wrote large, and never covered up his answers. "My daughter," Marilyn had said that fall to Mrs. Wolfe, Dr. Wolfe, "is a genius. An A in a college class, and the only girl, too." So Lydia had never told her mother that she didn't understand the Krebs cycle, that she couldn't explain mitosis. When her mother framed the grade report from the college, she hung it on her wall and pretended to smile. After biology, Marilyn had other suggestions. "We'll skip you ahead in science this fall," she'd said. "After college biology, I'm sure high school physics will be a snap." Lydia, knowing this was her mother's pet subject, had agreed. "You'll meet some of the older students," her father had told her, "and make some new friends." He'd winked, remembering how at Lloyd, older had meant better. But the juniors all talked to each other, comparing French translations due next period or memorizing Shakespeare for the quiz that afternoon. To Lydia, they were merely polite, with the distant graciousness of natives in a place where she was a foreigner. And the problems about car crashes, shooting cannons, skidding trucks on frictionless ice. She couldn't make the answers turn out. Race cars on banked tracks, roller coasters with loops, pendulums and weights, around and around, back and forth she went. The more she thought about it, the less sense it made. Why didn't the race cars tip over? Why didn't the roller coaster fall from its track? When she tried to figure out why, gravity reached up and pulled down the cars like a trailing ribbon. Each night when she sat down with her book, the equations, studded with K and M and theta, seemed pointed and dense as brambles. Above her desk, on the postcard her mother had given her, Einstein stuck out his tongue. Each test score had been lower than the last, reading like a strange weather forecast. 90 in September, mid-80s in October, low-70s in November, 60s before Christmas. The exam before this one, she'd managed a 62, technically passing, but hardly passable. After class, she'd shredded it into penny-sized scraps and fed it down the third-floor toilet before coming home. Now, there was the 55, which like a bright light made her squint, even though Mr. Kelly hadn't written the F at the top of the page. She'd stashed it in her locker for 2 weeks under a stack of textbooks, as if the combined weight of algebra and history and geography might snuff it out. Mr. Kelly had been asking her about it. hinting that he could call her parents himself if necessary. And finally, Lydia promised to bring it back after Christmas break with her mother's signature. All her life, she had heard her mother's heart drumming one beat. Doctor, doctor, doctor. She wanted this so much, Lydia knew, that she no longer needed to say it. It was always there. Lydia could not imagine another future, another life. It was like trying to imagine a world where the sun went around the moon, or where there was no such thing as air. For a moment, she considered forging her mother's signature, but her handwriting was too round, too perfectly bulbous, like a little girl's script. It would fool no one. And last week, something even more terrifying had happened. Now, from under her mattress, Lydia extracted a small white envelope. Part of her hoped that somehow it would have changed, that over the past 8 days the words would have eroded so she could blow them away like soot, leaving nothing but a harmless blank page. But when she blew, just one quick puff, the paper quivered. The letters clung. Dear Mr. Lee, we thank you for your participation in our new early admission process and are very pleased to welcome you to the Harvard class of 1981. For the past few weeks, Nath had checked the mail every afternoon, even before he said hello to their mother, sometimes before he took off his shoes. Lydia could feel him aching to escape so badly that everything else was falling away. Last week at breakfast, Marilyn had leaned Lydia's marked-up math homework against the box of Wheaties. "I checked it last night after you went to bed," she said. "There's a mistake in number 23, sweetheart." 5 years, a year, even 6 months earlier, Lydia would have found sympathy in her brother's eyes. "I know, I know." Confirmation and consolation in a single blink. This time, Nath, immersed in a library book, did not notice Lydia's clenched fingers, the sudden red that rimmed her eyes. Dreaming of his future, he no longer heard all the things she did not say. He had been the only one listening for so long. Since their mother's disappearance and return, Lydia had been friendless. Every recess that first fall, she had stood to the side, staring at the first federal clock in the distance. Each time a minute ticked by, she squeezed her eyes shut and pictured what her mother might be doing, scrubbing the counter, filling the kettle, peeling an orange. As if the weight of all those details could keep her mother there. Later, she would wonder if this had made her miss her chance, or if she had ever had a chance at all. One day, she had opened her eyes and found Stacy Sherwin standing before her. Stacy Sherwin of the waist-long golden hair, surrounded by a gaggle of girls. In Middlewood's kindergarten class, Stacy Sherwin was the kingmaker, already adept at wielding her power. A few days earlier, she had announced, "Janine Collins stinks like garbage water," and Janine Collins had peeled away from the group, ripping her glasses from her tear-smudged face, while the other girls in Stacy's coterie tittered. Lydia, from a safe distance, had watched this unfold with awe. Only once, on the first day of kindergarten, had Stacy spoken to her directly. "Do Chinese people celebrate Thanksgiving?" And, "Do Chinese people have belly buttons?" "We're all going over to my house after school," Stacy said now. Her eyes flicked briefly to Lydia's, then slid away. "You could come too." Suspicion flared in Lydia. Could she really have been chosen by Stacy Sherwin? Stacy kept looking at the ground and wound a ribbon of hair around her finger, and Lydia stared, as if she might be able to see right into Stacy's mind. Shy or sly? She couldn't tell. and she thought then of her mother, her face peering through the